Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Among those joining the outcry over President Trump's budget plan are some religious leaders. CBS News is reporting that more than 100 faith leaders have signed a letter urging lawmakers to support the State Department and the international affairs budget. They say it's only a small amount of money to spend to promote things like human rights and fighting poverty and helping to prevent infectious diseases like Ebola. It may seem as if it was a long time ago, but it was less than 3 years ago when the Ebola epidemic reached its peak in West Africa. Here's NBC News's Richard Engel in June of 2014.
Health officials are taking no chances as they race to contain an outbreak of one of the world's deadliest viruses, Ebola. There's no cure or vaccine, and for the first time ever on this scale, Ebola has broken out in an urban area. The World Health Organization is very concerned.
This is one of the most challenging Ebola outbreaks that we have ever faced.
The Ebola outbreak is what drew Dr. Stephen Hatch, a specialist in infectious disease at UMass Memorial Medical Center, to Liberia. His new book about his experiences is titled Inferno: A Doctor's Ebola Story, and he joins us in our studios. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So why did you go to Liberia in the first place? Because your work on Ebola was actually the second time, right?
That's correct. I'm an infectious disease doctor with an interest in international health, and I had gone to my boss asking about where I could get involved in work in sub-Saharan Africa, with the main goal of being to go to Ghana, because we have a large population of Ghanaians in Worcester, and he had contacts in Liberia rather than Ghana. And so I ended up in Liberia really by accident, and that happened about 6 weeks before the Ebola outbreak started in Guinea.
And so then you went back again, then we're saying a second time, right?
And then I returned in late September of 2014, about 10 months later.
I see. So describe what it was like there.
When I had returned to work in an Ebola treatment unit in Bong County, I was out in a very rural outpost near the border of Ivory Coast and Guinea. It was a set of hastily constructed structures that were really built in a matter of weeks, that were designed to get patients in to these units where we could treat them as best we could. It was very rudimentary, and it was up on a hill in the middle of the jungle. So it was very a rudimentary set of facilities that were provided, and we made the best that we could with what we had that was put together in a very short amount of time.
And what's it like there in general, without, you know, aside from the medical facilities, what's life like for people there?
I think in Monrovia, as well as in the surrounding countryside, in some ways, life is very much like it is here, in the sense that there are people who have hopes and dreams and fears and ambitions just like the rest of us. Their physical lives of the average Liberian is very different from ours. And I think sometimes as Americans, we tend to focus on the differences first without really realizing that they are just like us. But the physical differences that prevent people living into their 70s and 80s on average, like we do here in the United States, are simple things about infrastructure development: running water, access to electricity around the clock, and good healthcare facilities that are available without having to travel long distances.
So why did you want to chronicle your experiences there in a book?
I had a variety of goals in writing this, in which I wanted to use my experiences more as a framework to discuss some things that were important to me. As we've sat through this hour, I've been listening to all of the different interviews that you've been doing, and it's interesting to me how so much of them are tied in certain ways to what took place 3 years ago and the kind of discussion that got driven in the national political scene, and how that got us to where we are. And even when you were just having a conversation about winners and losers in the federal budget, which could seem fairly remote to what happened in the Ebola crisis, I think to a certain extent, and as you were having a discussion with Dr. Orff, the kind of expertise that could be brought to bear in situations like international health crises like what we saw in West Africa are going to be affected by this. And so one of the things I wanted people to be aware of in writing the book is what are the underlying narratives that helped drive national political discussions that we have today. And I needed to do that by talking about the history of Liberia, the history of Ebola, the history of relationship between America and sub-Saharan Africa.
You know what else, though? When I asked you the first question about describing what it was like, you were very clear to make sure that we describe folks in Liberia not as other. And that's something that you also talk about in your book on a couple of different levels. And I thought it was really interesting when you spoke about being a medical professional and having this concern that sometimes you might forget the humanity of what you're doing because you have to focus on the medicine. Sometimes you have to focus so much on the medicine that you have to forget so you can focus on the medicine, right? So that was fascinating to me. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, I think the paradox that you're getting at is that as doctors, to take care of patients, we have to learn to a certain extent to be heartless in order to deliver the best possible care and the most empathetic care, which seems contradictory. And simultaneously, when you're a doctor in another place, you have to both be simultaneously sensitive to the differences that exist and not to impose your own cultural viewpoint on what's going on, but also to take a look more broadly at what's happening and that there are real differences for people. And I felt like the Ebola story in the United States focused so much on the physical protective gear that doctors had to wear, what we used to call PPE, personal protective equipment.
And that's what we saw all over the news.
Right. And it's such an arresting visual image that it dehumanizes, I think, to a large extent, the suffering that really went through the population. And one of the goals I had in writing about some of the stories about some of the patients that I got to know was to humanize that story so that they didn't understand it just as an impersonal virus. I did not want the virus to be center stage. I wanted Liberia and its people to be center stage. Mm.
You know, you write about a very powerful story in the book about a boy named Tolbert. He's a 9-year-old boy who died while his cousins watched. Can you just tell us a little bit about what happened there?
So that happened on a day when I was actually training another doctor who's also from Boston. Her name is Kwon Kyu Lai. And I was training her to work in the Ebola treatment unit. She had done previous training to get her prepared, but this was her first or second shift on. And so we were going through fairly slowly and carefully, and I had come into the confirmed ward where we put the patients who we knew who had Ebola. And this young man we knew was very ill, and his cousins were over in the other bed, a boy of about the same age and his younger sister, who was about 6. And when I came in to find them, because this Ebola treatment unit really was a set of tarps and with a corrugated tin roof on top of it, the electricity that was inside didn't always work, and the light bulb was out. And I was having some difficulty establishing whether, in fact, this young boy had passed away. And so because I was distracted, I kind of was not paying attention to the children. And as a consequence, what I talk about in the book is, you know, how this whole experience for these children must have just added to what was already something that will give them nightmares for the rest of their lives.
Oh my gosh. And was that, I mean, does that haunt you?
Unfortunately, I can say it wasn't even the second worst thing that gnaws at me. And what I talk about in the book is some of the difficulties that I had in dealing with those situations, particularly when they got exacerbated by mistakes I made in the moment.
Hmm. Were you frightened about actually contracting the virus yourself?
No, I was not, in part because when you go into a situation like that, you know that will distract you from the job in front of you. And because we had so much work to do, that wasn't particularly something in the front of my head. What I did think was a possibility was being subject to violence, because what we didn't know was going to happen was whether or not the social fabric in Liberia was going to rip apart. I actually think that was a much bigger threat to international health workers during the time than contracting Ebola itself.
You know, what lessons can we take, do you think, from what happened there? And what do you take from your experiences? And you tell me you want to go back, right?
I do. I miss Monrovia. I'm very fond of Liberia, and I'm fond of the people of Liberia. They have a kindness and an openness and also a kind of puckish sense of humor that I found to be very comforting when I was there. And the other thing that I really loved about Liberia is, you know, it's a tough place to live, and people often live lives that are much shorter than they should be, but they have hope. And Liberia recovered from a terrible civil war that lasted from the late 80s all the way into the early 2000s. And life for them is getting better, and they look at it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that that, for me, was one of the takeaways of the experience, is understanding that you have to take the long view. And I felt that that, in particular, influenced my view about understanding when a patient presents before you, there's a whole series of literally hundreds of years of government policies and things that have happened all around the world that affect how that person lived their life in that moment.
All right. Dr. Stephen Hatch, an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Massachusetts Medical School and an infectious disease specialist at UMass. His new book is Inferno, A Doctor's Ebola Story. You can find more information at our website, radioboston.org. Dr. Hatch, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Deborah.
That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.